Welcome to the Fat Fuel Family Podcast, where every week Danny and Maura Vega discuss topics that help families live a healthy and active lifestyle with their little ones, including nutrition and training, peaceful parenting, education, and mindset. To stay up to date, make sure to hit subscribe on this podcast and check out the blog at www.fatfuel.family. You can also find them on Facebook and Instagram at dannyvega.ms, at fatfueledmom, and at fatfueledkids, and Fat Fuel Family on YouTube. Enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, sorry for the interruption, but I have an exciting announcement I wanted to share with you. You all know how fond I am of the carnivore diet. I started it in August of 2017, and for the most part, in the past 3 years, I've stuck to it. I've teamed up with my great friend, Adam Scheible, host of the Million Pound Mission podcast, to create a course for any of you who are curious about the carnivore diet. It's called Couch to Carnivore, and this course covers the range of diets from low carb to carnivore. You don't have to be following a ketogenic diet or even a low carb diet to start. We take you through 7 phases from the standard American diet all the way to strict carnivore. Once you finish this course, you'll be armed with all the right information to decide which variation works best for you. In addition, we offer follow-along videos, recipe ideas, and all the great community building and support that Adam is known for. You can check that out at couchtocarnivore.com. That's couchtocarnivore.com. Welcome to the Fat Fueled Family Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Vega, and I'm joined by my slash wife who does it all. She does it.
Oh my gosh.
You know what slash means? No. It's when you do like...
Oh, like the slash.
Yeah.
Slash mom slash...
Yeah.
I get it.
She never knows.
I thought it was like slasher. I don't know.
No. And we are here with Jeff and Kara
from
Colorado Craft Beef. And oh my goodness. Look, she's having a blast.
Yes, she's enjoying herself,
guys.
I love it.
So, we're doing this one live right now. And so we have some questions, but if anybody wants to send over some questions, I'll be able to see them and we'll address them. Yeah. But just in case you guys missed our last 2 episodes, I just want to give a quick intro. This week's guests have both joined us for individual episodes, and you can find those in the show notes. Jeff and Kara Smith's own and operate Colorado Craft Beef. And over the last couple of weeks, we've explored animal health and husbandry, all the operational facets of ranching, as well as the business side. And today we're going to be answering your questions and going deeper before we conclude our series with them. So welcome back to the show, Jeff and Kara.
Hey, thanks for having us on. Emma had to go play. She wasn't going to have as much fun with this, I think, as we are, but we're excited to be here.
Jeff, let me just tell you, man, I haven't seen you in a while and you look thinner, dude. So I just had to give you that compliment. You look great.
Danny's really good at that. He really always picks up on that.
I'm observant.
Well, I appreciate it. It's been nice being on carnivore and working through eating more correctly and, you know, trying to be a better role model for Emma. And, you know, working at the ranch, and there's no shortage of calorie burning opportunities. So,
yeah,
this is true. And so true.
Have you, I know we shared, you guys should definitely check out the blog post that I shared with Jeff's update. I think at the time, what were you, like 2 or 3 months into it at the time, the write-up that you sent me, Jeff, on your experience?
Yeah, right about 3 months, I think.
Okay, so can you just update us all, like what have been the major takeaways with carnivore with you?
Just in general, feeling more lean, feeling just generally more healthy. But of course, I've lost a fair amount of weight to the point that I've had to buy new belts, which is always a good thing. And, you know, sleep has been a lot easier. I've had a lot more energy during the day. And just overall, I don't know why I wouldn't do this more often or, you know, be better about it. And a good buddy of mine who's a wheat farmer in Oregon switched to carnivore. So the bizarre thing is you've got a plant farmer that went all carnivore and he's even blown away. He's like, people are challenging him on why he's carnivore. And he's like, I'm a farmer. I grow wheat. If I'm going carnivore, you guys should listen.
Like there's real, right?
There's literally no conflicts of interest.
Jeff, you may not know about this, but I'm curious, like, do you know when someone goes into farming and there's, you know, how everything's so broken apart and specialized, do you think he has the ability to start, you know, rotating in extra things like with the land that he has and all that stuff? Is there not really much room for anything like that?
He does a fair amount of rotation. He does mustard and some canola. There's different rotational things you do in soil that allow you to use natural fumigation techniques, not allow certain diseases to live in the soil. But that's all very regionally specific. So you've got to be really careful that you are growing something that can still be economical in your area.
Yeah, yeah, that's big. The business side of it, obviously. So, all right. What do you want to do? Let's not do that.
I know. I was going to say, I'm like, we've asked them this question so many times.
We're not going to ask them.
Is there a new problem you guys are trying? No.
No, no.
Yeah. Go ahead. Why don't you start with the questions, and I'm sure people will start asking some stuff.
Okay, because this was a good one. I saw it happen at the beginning of the lockdown pretty quickly, and then it went back down. But someone asked, are meat prices going to go up? How would this affect families on carnivore and keto diets?
Okay. Well, I think we've all seen meat prices go up. I think supply was a small issue for a while, depending on your regional challenges. I think prices will continue to go up like they do on everything to some degree. But for families in particular that are on keto or carnivore, buying in bulk, shopping conservatively, and just pre-planning is going to give you the best opportunity to minimize that impact on your checkbook.
Do you do quarter, half, and full cow shears?
Yeah, and we actually go all the way down to an eighth on the bulk side.
Is that like what would that be, like 60 pounds or
it's right more? At 50 pounds. Yeah,
50 pounds. Okay, that's good. That's a good amount of meat, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've actually seen supply level out quite a bit here in the last little bit as far as being able to harvest cattle. But box beef prices have gone down, especially compared to the initiation of COVID. So they are leveling out quite a bit here in the last month or so.
Is there anything in the future that's being proactively done? I know you guys did well and you guys figured it out, but have you seen any new like innovations that people are like just putting in place for future events, like what would happen with COVID?
So there has been a big push to look at either building or reopening some of these smaller to mid-level processors to be able to process more cattle and spread out the area that it's actually processed instead of relying on these very large harvest plants, because we're in the midst of labor issues with those, and that's gotten better, but it still hasn't gone away.
Because they probably furloughed or laid off a bunch of people because of the, you know, distance between each other and contamination.
It was the majority of it was sickness. So they had sickness running through their plants. And then, yes, you're right, they needed to spread out workers. So that slowed down chain speeds. So that's impacted how much meat has actually gone onto the market.
So the going to the smaller plants at the end of the day, it guarantees that there's a free flow of supply, but the margins are going to go way down, I'm sure, right? For the actual ranchers having to go to these, because there's smaller quantities being processed, I would assume that it's going to be, you know, less cost effective.
Yeah, and the bigger issue with those small plants becomes, do they have their own supply chain? You know, can they kill 100 animals a week and send them to a grocery store? Because most of that is owned by the large meat packers. So it's very regional, because you just can't compete with those big guys and their shipping networks. So it's a helpful thing in the region that those kill plants are at. But do you really think that those regional plants, if 10 of them pop up, it's still not like an order of magnitude change in the national market, do you think?
I wouldn't say it would be a huge change, but there are some smaller programs, some branded beef programs that are always looking for harvest capacity. And that's where it's really going to help, is some of these smaller, more regional type programs that already have their own supply chain set up, but they just need a place to be able to harvest cattle, because that's been a big issue, is being able to actually get cattle through these plants.
So if a large packer... Is there like a sense of cooperation, you know, with these larger packers who they're not going to have the capacity,
would they be, what, do you see any of them being willing to share their supply chain or somehow make sure that these smaller packers are able to get the product, you know, the processed product to the stores? Because that would be the next, if they have, they have the new plants, but they don't have the ability to, you know, the process in place to get them to the market, you know, then they're still stuck, right?
Yeah, these, the larger plants, they still have a flush of cattle in our area in particular, especially because a lot of them have been backed up because of COVID not being able to get as many processed. So at this point, they still have a flush of cattle to be able to go through their plants. And these smaller, more regional ones, it's going to take a bit for them to get up and running, to have, you know, the certifications. And especially if they're building them from the ground up, they're at least 2 years out before they can get them built and then operational. So,
and their cost of operation per head is going to be significantly higher. So yeah, it's not a one for one trade. Yeah, that becomes a marketing and logistics thing.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Wow. Awesome. All right. Well, here's our next question. A lot of credible people and organizations, they're finally reporting on how bad these fake meat products are for our health and for the environment. Have you seen a dip in your market share? And what do you think the future holds for, you know, for this side of the business?
Well, I know Kara's been in a lot of meetings with people that talk about this. My impression from the sales side is we've not really run into that. Our demographic is people that like a good steak, and that's pretty hard to mimic. But long-term, I think Kara's got some pretty strong opinions about that. And all the big packers are invested in them to some degree, just as a way to minimize market, but also to have a position at the table.
Right.
So,
yeah. And, you know, we talk about fake meat being a big competitor in the beef industry. Reality is I'm not really sure that's the case. I don't think that people that traditionally enjoy a good steak are moving over to these products. I think it's just giving an alternative if somebody wants to take a look at that. You know, if they're normally on that kind of bandwagon or thinking about things a little different, then maybe. You know, we always look at that as, it's something definitely to be aware of. And like Jeff said, a lot of these large packers actually are invested in them as well. It's kind of one of those things, you really can't have a voice if you don't have a seat at the table either. So looking on how they protect their business and, you know, see that going forward, but some have diversified their portfolio into these products, because they call it more of, you know, like a flexitarian type of, individual that they're trying to target, versus, you know, the traditional people that really enjoy a good steak that probably would never consider that. But it was really interesting to see a lot of the store shelves during COVID.
They still had all that stuff was still
it was
there.
Still there. So
even in a pandemic, nobody wants that.
Even in a pandemic, it's still there.
Yeah. And I think really the other thing, and I'm not sure what's happened recently with their supply chains, but when you looked at how much product they can produce versus how much beef demand there currently is, it was a really small percentage.
Wow.
Granted, that's going to change over time. And if we don't pay attention as an industry or as consumers, maybe it becomes a significantly higher percentage. I can't say that I've tried it. And I feel like it might cause a divorce if I bring home fake meat. But it's certainly something we're keeping an eye on.
Let me tell you, I used to work with a company that was also in Colorado that I had nothing but good things to say about them. Good products. And the minute I saw, I didn't even know that they were doing this. Someone actually said, "These your boys?" You know, like,
and are these just, your friends?
I was like, I literally sent an email and I said, I'm afraid, like, fake meat. Yeah. I'm gonna have to immediately stop promoting your stuff, because
yeah,
I get it from a business standpoint. You wanna capture a new audience and you wanna get, you know, a new market, an emerging market, but
morality of
yeah
it.
It's just not to me, it comes off as I don't like it, so yeah, that's my little
especially soapbox. Especially if they're coming out to conferences, like you're pushing a certain
and I'm trying to message introduce of them health to the keto
to the keto community and stuff like that, and it's just like nobody's gonna get behind that stuff. So
all right, am I next?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so let's see
that one.
Oh, number four. Okay. How can meat producers and consumers think forward to protect themselves from future issues with the supply chain? So I'd be interested if you have any thoughts on the consumer side, but the producers, of course, but curious about, I haven't even thought about how I can do that. I would assume,
like, literally what's going to happen buying, if we go buying to the grocery and there's like no meat. And
buying in
like,
bulk would be it, you know? Buying
in
bulk.
That's what I would think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's it. Just good planning for whoever it may be, whether it's a producer or a consumer. You know, we're actually pouring concrete in the new building outside today. They're working crazy in the heat right now so that we can plan accordingly. But then we've also got some customers that have bought a half of beef and they've requested 50 pounds a month until it's done. So it's just a matter of planning through that, planning for what your family needs, because as shown in COVID, or like the guys do in Europe, they go grocery shopping every day. With that type of a plan, if something goes haywire, you don't have anything to lean on. So where we live, you know, we're 30 minutes from the closest grocery store, so we're always stocked up. But just some of that pre-planning. And then really, if you do that judiciously, it should be able to save you some money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll tell you guys, everybody listening out there, go to Lowe's. Check out the ice boxes, the freezers. They're not expensive. I got a really good one. And with the warranty, it was like $176. We've had it for like 3-4 years.
We could just use maybe like one that's
vertical.
Has like vertical and like more sections.
It's
just one deep thing. So of course if something's at the bottom, it's the
worst. Well, and there is a big freezer shortage right now. Freezers are back ordered nationwide.
Wow. Oh, I didn't know
that. I didn't even think of that. That's true.
It's been a huge deal. So that's something we've got a customer that ordered a quarter beef, I think the 1st of May, and she still doesn't have the freezer.
Wow.
So we're just waiting on her. She's been really great about emailing us, but it's been delay.
Wow.
Because people hadn't done that. People hadn't planned ahead.
Yeah.
And then actually on our website, we have a buying in bulk fact page, FAQ page, and it gives you an idea of how much space you need for a half of beef, for a quarter beef. So if you're thinking about buying one and you want to know cubic footage requirements, Kara did a great job getting that piece put together, and it's some good information for anybody that hasn't done that before.
That is good information, because we didn't do that research when we first bought. Remember when we first, you're like, yeah, I bought half a cow, and then
like, oh my gosh, we didn't even have a freezer back
then. I don't even have an actual freezer. I was like, oh.
You should have seen our freezer.
We had to throw away some stuff.
Well, I just want to clarify something, because I think this is pretty cool. I don't know if I understood this correctly, but does this mean that you guys have an actual option where, and I think this helps with the supply side for you as well, where let's say someone purchases a quarter cow or a half cow, and they're getting it in monthly increments. Let's say they do 50 pounds for 2 months. That would be a quarter. So would that be what you do? Like, or is it on an individual basis? How exactly does it work if someone wanted to do that?
What we're doing right now is people just order the half of beef and then ask, you know, how, or relay to us how they want it shipped. Because some of the stuff we deliver locally, other stuff we drop on FedEx, you know, in the boxes you got last week. But what we have is an internal inventory sheet that when your box goes out, your shipment goes out, and you've got a pre-purchase, we then send you an update of that, of everything we sent, so you can reconcile it back. And then just the next time, it just whittles it down until it's gone.
I love that. That's a great idea.
Awesome. So can you guys share some different examples? Well, I'd love this. I'd love to know this too, on how to age beef at home and how this would change the flavor of the meat.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people don't understand
that. We'll let the meat scientist go on the flavor and all the crazy science stuff. From a cooking standpoint, there's some things you can do. You can buy a steak ager. You actually have little self-contained lockers that are steak agers you can buy online. There are some dry aging bags you can buy that actually let air out, but not let air in, so it doesn't rot. I've not used those. I hear they're kind of expensive, so maybe it'd be fun for Christmas or something interesting, but I don't know if you could do it all the time. But the big trick is to understand how the beef was handled before you got it, because our beef is aged for 3 weeks before it goes to you. And then it was frozen. So aging it again might not do anything. Carol will speak to the science on that. But if you're buying stuff at the store that's never been frozen, you might be able to do some aging. So understanding that process is most important, only secondary to how the beef has been handled previously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be the most ideal way to age, is before it's ever frozen, because that basically stops the breakdown process. So that's why we age everything as soon as it's harvested and it goes into a chill cooler. And then it's aged as, you know, a half whole carcass, basically. So that basically breaks down a lot of the enzymes and it gets much more tender. So when you have that kind of buttery, kind of like that really softer flavor, that comes from some of that breakdown that comes from the aging process. And also that kind of really deep, how would you describe it?
The beef flavor.
Yeah, kind of deepens the beef flavor. When you do that aging process, of course, you know, prior to it actually being a frozen product. Mm-hmm. There is some breakdown that could occur after it's been frozen and, you know, you defrosted it. But it's a little bit different than when you first start that process from the time the carcass is harvested. So
one of the things that would be probably good for people to know is if they buy a quarter cow, you know, there is a little bit of whatever the word, I guess you call it, attrition, right, during the aging process, and we're going to be counting the weight before we age it, right? So if someone sees that the weight that they got is off, can you clarify that? Because there's probably, you know, the difference between hanging weight and what comes to the person.
Well, so you get a hot carcass weight, which is the weight that's taken at the processing facility. Everything we deal in between us and the customer is based on finished cut weight.
Oh, okay. Because of the cuts. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That way, what we've tried to do is minimize the back and forth with customers about, oh, which steer is this and how big was he and what's my price going to be? So we flattened a lot of that from a paperwork standpoint to minimize a ton of questions from the public, because if you have a simple price point and a simple understanding, it just makes it an easier transaction and it's easier for somebody else to monitor. So,
yeah. So basically we're taking that loss that does occur from when that animal's harvested until it's cut up, because there is a percentage of loss there, particularly water when they're aged. Yeah. It's relatively significant. But we feel like the return is the quality of product that you get at the end of the day. So
for like a 400-pound steer, how much are you losing, like a quarter of the weight? Or is it that much, or is it less than that?
I'd say the national average is like 10 to 15%.
Yeah, have okay. to look up for yeah. sure. But so yeah, that's the water loss.
Yeah, so an average carcass that goes into the processing plant, you know, when all the other things are taken off, it is a 800 to 900 pound carcass.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, like 800. Yeah.
And then you'll end up coming out in that 750 to 800 pounds of finished product, depending on bone loss, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So.
Gotcha.
Wow.
So one more question on that, because I don't know if this is considered aging, but I like to do this. I'll take the meat, if it's frozen, I'll put it on a plate and I'll put it in the fridge and I'll just...
But you don't... Frozen?
I haven't done this in a while. Remember, I used to do this? Yeah, we would take the meat when it's frozen, put it in the fridge. And
I like to defrost in there.
Yeah, and then just go patting it down. Because what I want to do is get the flesh as dry as possible before it hits the cast iron or whatever it is, because the crust is even better. That's not really aging though, right? That wouldn't be considered.
No, that's just food. That's just steak preparation is what I'd call that. Because we'll do that if we do a tri-tip or like the picanha you cooked last week. We'll season it in the morning, put a little Worcestershire on it, and let it sit in the fridge all day, and then pat down the moisture before you put it on.
That's I was supposed
picanha.
To. No, that's not the one. I didn't do
picanha?
The. I didn't I'm do like, it. Last
I didn't
week.
Have any. Picanha.
I didn't do it last week.
I was about to be like, excuse you.
Can you imagine?
You
like,
made the picanha.
It's probably like 3 pounds of meat that and just you disappeared. Did not- Well, I did the chuck.
I know, Danny.
I made the chuck eye roast
yesterday. Okay, it was the chuck.
I marinated it in like a citrus-like marinade with some...
It was good.
Yes, I was supposed to put Worcestershire sauce, but we didn't have it.
Yeah, we do.
I know.
Did we? I couldn't freaking find it. And the only thing is that she got mad because she wanted me to slow cook it.
It still tasted delicious though, because it's just good quality.
Yeah, I just put it. It was what, 2.5 pounds, and I put it after marinating it for like 5 or 6 hours. I put it in the air fryer for like 26 minutes total.
Came out amazing, actually.
13 minutes per side, and I sliced it. Which, you know, as far as a chuck goes, it's pretty unheard of to have a 30-minute chuck. And it doesn't taste like a shoe.
Yeah.
Right.
It was actually still.
Yeah, because usually he'll put it in the oven for hours, right?
Long mm-hmm. time. Yeah. Like 250 for forever.
Yeah.
All right. So let's see.
So I asked about the aging. So underrated.
Oh, I like this one. Yeah. What are some of
and
the
we
most.
We talked about this thing.
Yeah. We talked about this a little bit, but what are some of the most underrated cuts in your opinion, and how do you like to prepare them?
I'm going to defer to Kara on what she thinks the underrated cuts are, and then I'll talk about how to prepare them.
It still has to do with the preparation, so I'm going to have to take that one back with Jen. Really has to cook with the family. So,
yeah, you know, one of the steaks we really like to have here at the house is the flat or the bavette. And it eats a lot like a flat iron, very similar in texture, but it comes off the hip where the flat iron comes off the shoulder. So those have been a lot of fun. And I know depending on where you're at in the country, tri-tip and picanha are either unheard of or, you know, tri-tip's a California based cut. So we've got friends that are, that live in Bentonville, Arkansas, that are from California, and they hit us up for tri-tip because you can't find it out there.
Wow.
I love tri-tip.
Yeah. Tri-tip's probably one of my favorite.
For the leanness of it, you get a good amount of flavor. It's a mild, almost sweet flavor. I love that. I think the consistency of the flap and the flat iron is the same, but the taste is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And I do think that the flap and the skirt are kind of similar. I don't know what it is about them that I find them. Maybe it's the chewiness of it. I don't know what it is. How do you cook your flap? Do you grill it like a regular steak?
Yeah, a lot of times I'll butterfly. We actually have one in the fridge we're going to do tonight, but they come and they're, you know, like an inch and a half thick.
Yeah, they're thick.
Heavy.
Yeah.
So I'll actually slice it down the middle and butterfly it open so it's a lot thinner, similar to a flat iron. That allows you to get more flavor, a little more surface area, and get more of that char flavor that we're all after on a steak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
do you tenderize it at all after you butterfly it, or are you just, it's thin enough as it is that it's good to go?
I don't tenderize our beef very much. You know, 3-week aging process takes care of that.
Yeah.
That's true.
Still a lot of these cuts have quite a bit of connective tissue just from where they're actually coming from.
Yeah.
The animal. So that makes a difference.
Yeah. But like the flat iron, the, what's the other one that we love that has a lot of connective tissue? Like even the strip, but.
And the sirloin can have a lot of connective tissue too.
Sirloin.
Right. Yeah. We used to not eat that. Now we eat it because of the collagen.
But the sirloin is the one that we pound, like Cubans, it's palomilla.
Oh yeah, palomilla steak is basically that's like you'll Cubans take like it. a 6-ounce sirloin and it'll make it like this big.
It's like this
because it is like,
but it's so good. Yeah.
But it's usually not the best quality. That's why we did
right.
It.
But that's why exactly
right.
Okay, let's see what else we got.
Someone asked a question in there.
Yeah, someone said, I don't know if this is okay. So here in the Midwest, Iowa. Some of my clients who have cattle farms said that it is the processors that are helping create some of the uptick for them due to not being able to take the normal amount of cattle. But you said that they're good to go. They're good to go with cattle. So my clients are being pushed out to 2021 to get herds processed, and the processors are doing a lottery system for the rest of the year. Clients are losing a lot of heads.
Wow.
That's brutal.
So that... Some of these things do vary depending on which part of the country you're in. Because right where we are, we have, I think, 5 large major processors within
a day's drive.
Not even a day. I mean, we have quite a few in this part of the country, and this is where the majority of the cattle are fed. There are some back in the Midwest, not as much though. So as far as capacity, they may not have nearly as much as we do here. And then, of course, depending on the large processor, they have relationships with these feed yards or producers that they've had for years. So that's kind of how that lottery system ended up with the large processors. They took care of their big customers first, and then so on and so forth.
Well, and some of their personally owned, some of those large processors own some of their own cattle or have contracts in the supply chain, right?
Yeah, that's it's different when because when you put cattle in the feed yard and the commercial side, there's you either do it one of two ways as far as selling them to a processor. You are selling them live, so they're leaving the feed yard, and that's when they get paid for them or wherever they're leaving from. On that live weight, but there's others that have forward contracted to these processors to sell in the meat, or they call it the grid. So they may have already had contracts when these cattle were placed. Typically in the Midwest, they don't have as much of that. They leave it a little more open to the open market. So they're feeding cattle hoping, which in theory, there's no problem normally, hoping that they'll have harvest capacity or kill capacity for these cattle to go in. And during COVID, that changed a lot, and still they're not operating 100% like they were. So there's still some cattle that are being pushed out way further than they should be, and that makes it very difficult. But so they also might be talking about some of these smaller processors because they are booked out for years at this mm-hmm. point for these smaller, really local type.
Mm-hmm. And it's very regional. I mean, Eastern Nebraska is different compared to Colorado, and it's only 6 hours away. Mm-hmm. It's all very, very regional. Trucking fat cattle, you know, more than 6 or 8 hours is just a horrible idea from a loss standpoint.
Animal welfare, you don't want to do that.
Exactly. So it becomes a regional issue, and every region's a little different.
When you guys say pushing out, does that mean that they're delaying the harvest, and that would probably mean that the meat's not going to be right? Because what is the prime, like 8-9 months, or is that too late? What's the prime that they usually are harvesting?
So for our fed beef chain, anywhere from 18 to 24 months of age is the normal age that these cattle go to harvest.
Oh, 18 to 24. Okay. Okay.
Yep. But as far as time on feed, depending on if they were calves when these guys started feeding them, it's typically about 6 months or so that they're ready to go to harvest. If you're feeding yearlings, so they came in already being 12 to 14 months old, they're a 4 to 5 months on feed. And if you start pushing them out further than that, it does become an animal welfare issue. That's
because of like the digestion and like infections, right?
They're big at that point, and they're past the point that they should have been meat, and it mm-hmm. can really impact them from an animal welfare issue, and they could cattle could start dying because it's just not a good thing. So.
When really good feed efficiency becomes a problem.
Yeah. Well, and we've seen a little bit of that because the typical prime cutout, and I don't know the exact numbers, but the typical like graded prime beef cutout is X percent. Kara's dad was actually telling us this. And right as COVID started to slow down in that June, July timeframe, the prime percentage cutout was something like 3 times what it usually is because those cattle had been there so much longer.
Yeah. It means that they've been on feed a lot longer. So yeah.
So there's probably a sweet spot there, right? Because you get more marbling, but then it gets to that point where the animal's sicker. So what does that do to the flavor? I mean, it's bad for the animal. We've established that. But like, what happens to the meat? Is it viable still?
The meat would be fine. The biggest thing that you deal with when cattle that are, we would call them overdone, unfortunately, for lack of a better term, when you start sending them, they start getting into yield grade 4 and 5s, which means that we have so much more cutout, particularly trim. So the fat, it is very wasteful. The fat that are cut off of them, then we have a plethora of that. And not to get in the hot button topic, but that's why in the States, we import a lot of lean meat. I don't want to say a lot, but we import some lean meat because we have so much fat trim from our cattle here that we blend that fat trim in with this lean meat that we're importing for a lower cost product because the market for that fat trim is not overly significant.
And we've got more fat trim in this country as a national supply chain than we can use. So that's the one way to not waste that product.
Well, dude, that's.
I'll take it. I'm like, can I have
that? I'll take it. Let's throw that. Yeah, and not only that, like liverwurst, oh, and yeah.
Dude, I'll send you some if you want it.
Heck yeah, yeah, man. We'll I'll take it. Heck yeah.
I'm like fat. So funny.
Someone said,
I think she means,
I think
like
from tips, Frozen,
or tips from Frozen, or tips on freezing.
Yeah. So they said, do you, so someone said frozen meat. I think it's like, oh, how to properly keep it frozen and how long should I keep it? Oh, that's a good question.
That's a good question. I think that
never lasts that long here, but that's a good question.
Yeah, but I thought that when I see like an older piece, I'm just like, I don't know how long has that been there? Like,
you got to make sure that,
like, how long is acceptable, right? Like years.
Frostbite on it.
Right.
Yeah.
So it depends how it's packaged.
The USDA has printed instructions for this, and please look those up. But I believe it's a year in the freezer.
Okay,
but have to look them up, yeah, but sure. What's more important is how your beef is packaged. So you saw all the packaging you got from us. It's cryovac. It's vacuum sealed. It's in plastic. Well, as long as that cryo seal stays and it's in the freezer and that plastic doesn't get punctured, it's good to go. But if you'd have gotten a package from us, and you'd had air in the package because whatever, FedEx drop kicked the box on the way there, and the plastic got chipped, so it's leaking air, you want to cook that right away. But if it's stored properly, packaged properly, USDA has some recommendations to follow. And then the other thing that's a big one is, especially some of these custom processors still use butcher paper. And if they're using butcher paper, there's nothing wrong with it. A lot of them will actually wrap plastic, like saran wrap, around the beef and then wrap it in butcher paper. So it's about just thinking through the process of how the beef is packaged, how you're going to store it, minimizing banging it around in the freezer. You know, taking it in and out all the time is never a good idea. Reorganizing it or banging it on the ground or whatever. Did you find it?
No, I haven't yet.
Okay. So I don't want to misquote, but USDA has recommendations, and from the food safety standpoint, that's our canned answer, is follow USDA regulations. So, and actually one good thing, there's a lot of people we run into that are customers that don't know you can refreeze beef.
Oh yeah. And I didn't know that. Okay. So you,
yeah.
Oh, you cannot.
You absolutely can. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. USDA says as long as the internal temperature of the meat never got above 40 degrees, you can refreeze it. That's in our little handouts. If you looked at the little pamphlet you got in your beef box last week, it talks about that. It gives you the website. Cause I do know, even growing up, it was always a misnomer. You can't refreeze meat, but beef especially, you can refreeze as long as the internal temperature never gets above 40.
So unlike, because I think the big concern with like a chicken, or definitely for pork, I don't know if it's the same for chicken, but like, with pork, it's like, you know, the defrosting it and sending it back into the freezer increases the histamine. The histamine, like, if so, if someone has a histamine issue and they're unfreezing and refreezing pork, they're going to have problems. If
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, I thought it was aging. Yeah, it's sponge
meat. Okay. So Kara just confirmed USDA recommends 12 months.
4 to 12. Okay. Months. So a year.
Oh, 4 to 12.
That's the,
And then the only other thing I'm thinking about, the frozen stuff. So do you ever grill from frozen? That's like, that's a hip thing to do now. Apparently it's good.
Not usually, because the thing you'll run into is you'll have a really hot grill and the outside will be, you know, charred perfectly, and the inside's, you know, blue, rare, and cold.
Yeah.
So it's more about what you want to do. I really don't think, from a cooking standpoint, it gives the beef enough ability to generate the rest of the flavor it's working on. You know, the best way to cook a steak, in my opinion, and if you follow any of the Michelin star chefs or anything like that, they want that steak at room temperature when you cook it, because it allows that flavor to be really worked through and you get a uniform cook across the piece of meat. Not saying I haven't cooked from frozen before, but I prefer not to. And especially with thick steaks.
Cause then you get the char is too much, because it's
you got to leave it on longer, or it's going to be rare.
Yeah. And you get that to that point where the crust is, now you have
it's burnt,
a black
crust. Black.
All right. So we don't have any other questions, guys. That was a good amount of questions though. I think for a Q&A episode, that's pretty darn good. What else is up, guys? What else do you got coming up? I know we talked a little bit about the seasonings. Is there anything else coming up that we should share?
Well, our subscription functionality is live on the website now. Awesome. So we do have subscriptions available. And subscriptions are not required. You can still buy just a single box. And the other really great news is as of this week, we are fully caught up on orders. If you order this week, it'll ship Monday. We're back on a regular shipping schedule. So it's been 5.5 months in the making, but it's finally back.
By the way, I just thought of another question when you guys talked about seasonings, because this is something that I also wonder to myself every time. Like, do you salt or season the steak before you cook it or after you cook it? Like, I've heard that it takes out water or like, I don't know. What I'm gonna ask the the steak people.
Usually before.
Yeah.
I will season it and then pat it dry.
Right, pat it.
To make sure you get a bunch of stuff, you know, building up on it. Okay. But everybody has their own way. You know, you guys remember the old commercials of what's the best way to cook it, and all the guys were arguing over what seasonings to use.
Oh my gosh, I do remember that commercial.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, salt and pepper. And actually, if you, I don't know if you guys have tried it, the garlic pepper grinder from
Redmond, Real Salt.
Yes. That is legit.
Oh, that thing is awesome. Stuff.
I love the garlic salt and the garlic pepper. I'm a garlic fan, so I'll throw both of those on there.
Well, and their onion salt is super good when you start doing some pork or something.
Yeah, I wish I could use that one more, but
unfortunately, I do have a sensitivity to onions. I can do it. I can do it. But if it's but sometimes it's not even right away. It's like if I'm doing it every day, over time, I'll get massive headaches. Yeah, the headaches. I just get massive headaches. It's the craziest thing, which sucks because onions, I mean, everything that's delicious has onion powder, right?
Is this seriously Desmond saying, "Hey, Poppy," right now?
No, that's me talking to my dad.
Oh, I thought it was Desmond because he signed on as you.
My dad is watching right now.
So Josue's like, hey. On. Well, for me, I saw a video of how the seasoning goes into the steak. And apparently, I don't even do this, but at least I know it now, is like, it's the best is if you do it the day before, like a whole day.
Oh, like to season it?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I'll do it the morning that we're going to cook it.
That's what I usually do.
Yeah, that's good. The day before is probably like this.
No.
That's way too far in advance.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Cool, guys. This was awesome, man. This was a great, I think it was as holistic as we can get, as deep as we can get into meat knowledge without like getting completely confused, you know, on the details.
Yeah. So, well, if anybody's got 6 hours to burn, you know, we can just keep going.
So you guys know the website is coloradocraftbeef.com, Colorado Craft Beef on Instagram. Same thing with Facebook. And so the subscription is basically just a continuation of all the boxes. Like, you got the variety box. That's what I got last time. I think, is that what it's called? The variety box?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then there's the burger box. All of those are now available for subscription.
Yep. And the nice thing on subscriptions, we can go every month, every 2 months, or every 3 months.
Oh, nice.
Push it back. And we do some custom subscriptions in the back end. So if one of those just doesn't fit what you want to do, let us know. But I'll throw it out right now. We can't do the all ribeye box. Everybody
wants that. I know.
But
right? We barely eat ribeyes here because they go out the door.
They go out the door, right? I know.
That's sad.
These are giving away all your ribeyes.
That's sad. It's like a big mirage. Like, you're looking at it there and it's leaving.
There it goes.
Well,
I want people to appreciate the whole cow more. People should understand that there's a lot of delicious cuts on that animal.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think you guys saw the prime rib that we smoked last week.
Oh, so good.
That was, Kara looked at me kind of funny when it was sitting on the counter, but the plastic packaging was cracked. So it had leaked a little air. It wasn't sealed.
Oh.
So we took the bullet and made the prime rib here and ate that. So nobody else had to.
Nice. How was it?
Nice.
Oh, it was outstanding. It's the first time we've had our own prime rib.
Oh my gosh. Seriously.
Wow.
5 years, right?
That's
it's been
so
5 years.
I didn't even think of that,
how long has it been?
Even get to have your
We've been shipping beef just over 2 years.
Yeah.
But
when did you guys get, has it been 5 years that you guys been working on the farm, or it's been less than that?
Like farming.
Almost 5 years. We've been back at the ranch. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And did you guys, like, prime rib, you guys did it like the typical, like, you know, medium rare. When you smoke it, I got to look at the picture. I got to check that out again. But
Do you smoke it?
Yeah.
Smoke prime rib.
Yeah, like in the Traeger.
Like, what did you get to? Like 125, 130?
Yep. Yeah, 125, and then let it rest for about an hour. It'll climb another 10 degrees.
Wow, I don't let it rest that long. I usually do 20 minutes.
Danny's like, I gotta eat.
That's good. Exactly. An hour. That's the best. The best way to do it.
That is the best, though,
because
then it's
juicy.
Like so tender.
And mm-hmm.
So juicy.
I'll send you a picture in a little while, Danny. It was legit.
Oh, my God.
Awesome,
that
man.
That's amazing.
Well, guys, thank you so much. We're definitely, we're going to hold you to what you guys said. You know, both of you talked about sometime in the spring. We definitely want to go see you guys.
Well, we've been wanting to go to Colorado, too. So it'll be a perfect, perfect time, perfect trip.
Yep, and perfect.
Nothing better than being on the ranch, right?
Yes, exactly.
We're going to get Danny in a cowboy hat on a horse. And
that'll
be his new profile picture.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, with like a steak or something.
You know, my dad, I didn't tell you this, Jeff, but like my dad in Cuba was like a Cuban redneck. Yeah. You know, like he grew up in Holguín, which is like
it's like farms
on the east side of the island, rural. And then when he moved to the United States, the first place he went to was Texas. And like we have cousins who stayed, who never left. He was in Odessa, mm-hmm. Midland, and he was there for 2 years. And when he got to Miami, he used to have a belt buckle like about this big, and his nickname in high school was Cowboy. So,
he loves that. Yeah,
freaking loves it.
Yeah,
oh my
he's
gosh.
Like America.
My dad's like super America.
Yeah,
like,
he loves it.
He's like, I love this country.
I love it.
I
wish he was on.
No one's more patriotic than people who come from tyranny. I'll tell you that right now.
Right?
That is for sure.
They appreciate it. They appreciate it.
So true.
Well, guys, thank you so much. We really appreciate you guys. We appreciate your stuff. We're going to be, I'll tell everybody here so everybody knows, like whenever I order beef and it's not from my local guy, it's going to be from Colorado Craft Beef. Every single thing we've had has been delicious. I made
the ground beef. I mean, like that's literally
the ground beef is gone. We had like 5 or 6.
It's gone.
Pounds.
It's gone. It's always gone right away because the kids love it. It just
and
it's,
also
it's
we
easy,
used it.
You know?
We made a huge batch of organ meat burgers.
Oh, we did organ meat burgers.
Was the most consistently delicious all around. Like the because I had half of the heart, which was like whatever it was like a pound and 10 ounces or something of heart. It was 3 pounds of your ground beef. It was 12 ounces of your liver because we were taking it to friends. I usually put a pound, but I wanted to, you know.
Like, the friends were like, we don't know how much.
They're not
initiated. Yeah. Or it was just like, I didn't want to like scare them too much with the liver flavor.
Well, because you do grow accustomed to it.
Yeah.
So yeah.
and then it was, what was it? It was 20 ounces of bacon. So I grind them all together. I made them into 25 patties. It was about 100 and something ounces. So each patty was about 5 ounces and it was freaking delicious. And I finished the last two this morning.
Oh, you had the last two.
There's the last two.
That's okay. I know we always have one.
But we will be making the sirloin cap like maybe tomorrow. I'll take it out.
That's a picanha, right?
Yeah. We still haven't eaten the oxtail.
We have oxtail.
Oh, the tongue. We had the tongue last week.
Oh, the tongue.
Yeah.
All that.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Because I was out, remember?
What a waste. I saved some tongue for her and I didn't get to eat it. And then she never ate it. So, guys, thank you so much. The meat's delicious. Guys, check it out, everybody. Seriously, there's a difference. I promise you. Take my word for it. Hold me to it.
And support local farmers. Support people who are doing this. And
And support, like, delicious meat. delicious craft beef. That's just, you know, there's a craft to it, which I think is super cool. There's like and they take pride in it. So,
and since we're on Facebook, anyone who's on here and you're interested in this, interested in learning further on this topic, we have several other episodes on our podcast with Jeff and Kara that go deeper into different aspects of the farming process and the beef process. So definitely make sure to check those out.
And we can't forget Fat Field Fam.
If anybody has any questions, you know, reach out to us. We're happy to answer anything. So.
Yes.
Yep. They're very responsive. Well, thank you guys so much.
Thank you guys so much.
We'll talk to you soon.
We'll see you guys. Thank you.
Bye.
See you guys. Bye.
Hey guys, we're going to take a minute right now to tell you about one of our amazing sponsors, Santa Cruz Medicinals. Santa Cruz Medicinals is a company that we've been using for years now. They make high potency, high quality, lab tested CBD formulas at an affordable price. They offer ketogenic, paleo, gluten-free, sugar-free, lab tested formulas.
You all may remember when we did our cannabis series last year. One of the things we learned with CBD is that the research is pretty clear on dosage. 5 to 20 grams per kilogram is what you should be taking per day. And most of the quote-unquote CBD you see online and on Amazon is severely underdosed. Most of these products are offering dosages that are so low, you'd have to down a bottle a day. That's why we love Santa Cruz Medicinals, because they offer highly dosed, potent CBD with clean ingredients, and they have several cool products, but we want to share our favorites with you. So what are your favorites, my love?
All of them? No, really. I have yet to try a product from them that I don't love. However, I will talk about some of my ride or die products. So during my cycle, I get horrible migraines, guys. And my go-to is definitely their peppermint tincture or the 10,000 milligrams to get a potent anti-inflammatory dose. Peppermint has been shown in studies to relieve migraine pain. But let's talk about the pain salve real quick, because this I use for almost everything. And everyone in this household agrees we cannot live without it. So the CBD pain salve, it has clean ingredients that you can trust, but it also has peppermint, which really, really helps. And so what I like to do is I'll rub some on my temples, and it really provides instant relief for me when I have bad headaches. But of course, I'll use it as well for any muscle pain that I have.
Well, I'm personally a huge fan of the 10,000 milligram bottles of CBD in MCT oil. I put it in my coffee, and then again at night, I'll put some more in, like some broth or whatever drink I'm drinking, a hot tea, to get an adequate dose for the day. I also love the pain salve, especially when I'm extra sore. We usually take turns massaging it onto each other, and it always does the job. You guys also have to try the new CBD infused hemp and collagen protein. If you're a fan of horchata, you will love this one.
Oh, that one is so good, guys. We just tried it and it is so good. So yeah, if you're interested, check them out. You can find them at scmedicinals.com. And of course, don't forget to use the code FatFueledMom at checkout to save 15% on your order and get free shipping, guys.